the Buddha, which is the Dharma, which is the Sangha. One of the areas that can be most confusing for people is how to understand what it is to truly be compassionate to oneself. We've had two talks in this retreat so far, and both the talks have been about love, approached from two different angles. So this one also is about love. The first two talks emphasized the love of the eternal. And what I'd like to try to show in this talk is the way in which having genuine compassion and love for ourselves helps the eternal do the eternal's work within us. The first thing I'd like to talk about for a few minutes is what and who we take refuge in. So let's start with a kind of a loose definition of what it means to have compassion for ourselves, to be kind to ourselves. Now let's just point out the things that traditionally are always pointed out in Buddhism that do not constitute being compassionate to ourselves. One of them is the extreme of indulgence. The other is the extreme of asceticism. Indulgence means really the misuse or the abuse of body and mind. And doing things that are non-perceptual, that create suffering for ourselves. And since what we're trying to do is to do that which diminishes suffering, obviously doing that which creates suffering for ourselves is not being kind to ourselves. But it's funny how confused we get about these things, you know. Many people think that indulging themselves is being kind to themselves. And to put it a little more clearly, indulging self, being self-indulgent, is not actually being kind to oneself, because it strengthens greed, hate, and delusion. On the other hand, if you go to the other extreme of asceticism and you have such a tight rein on yourself that you're actually being cruel to yourself, not giving your humanity any leeway or compassion or kindness at all, that's not helpful either. And that also just perpetuates suffering. So the Buddha taught the middle path, and that's what we are trying to practice. This gives a context for the definition I'm going to give, the kind of thumbnail definition of what it is to be kind to ourselves. That is to refrain from doing those things that create suffering, and to do those things that diminish suffering. So, the question is, what and who should we take refuge in order to accomplish, help us accomplish this? And we can start by saying what not to take refuge in and who not to take refuge in. We don't want to take refuge in activities that perpetuate greed, hate, and delusion, feed greed, hate, and delusion. We don't want to take refuge in people who are deluded and who will encourage us to be deluded too. One of the things I love about Reverend Master G.U. and I love about Dogen is that they don't mince words. And here's some things that Dogen said. These are both from the Shishogi. He says, "One must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts, nor must one worship in places of heresy, for such things are contrary to the truth. One must instead take refuge quickly in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for therein is to be found utter enlightenment as well as freedom from suffering. One must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts, nor must one worship in places of heresy." Let's just kind of interpret that a loose interpretation of that. One must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts. Don't involve yourself in spiritual activities that are goofy, because they don't help. There's also the more specific meaning here, which is very important, but generally, you know, when you're looking for refuge, take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, not in spiritual goofiness of whatever type. "Nor must one worship in places of heresy." Same thing, really. Heresy means leave out the kind of old Christian medieval views of heresy, or modern Christian views of heresy. Let's think about for a moment what heresy might mean to a Buddhist. Just means deluded spiritual views. Nowadays, as I've been pointing out in recent months, you know, there's an awful lot of love and light delusion around, and it's very easy to get caught up in that. It can be very attractive. For a master called love and light delusion, the delusion that sounds like truth, and therefore the most dangerous delusion. You know, from the Buddhist point of view, that's a heretical view of things. Here's another quote from Dogen that further explains what I've just read. "Avoid the company of those who are deluded and ignorant with regard to the truth of karmic consequence, the three states of existence, and good and evil." That really precisely nails it. What is the truth of karmic consequence? All of our choices have consequences. Therefore, we want to look carefully at the choices we make and try to do those things which will not perpetuate suffering, will not feed the causes of suffering, greed, hate, delusion. The law of karma, as the Reverend Master so often said, is inexorable. We make our choices, we do our actions, there are consequences, and they're going to roll in, and nothing can stop that fact. So, knowing that, think carefully and meditate carefully about our choices. and avoid the company of those who are ignorant about all this and working from some other basis. Also avoid the company of those who are ignorant with regard to the three states of existence. Three states of existence, I believe what is meant here is the teachings of changeableness, suffering, and no self. The three characteristics of samsaric existence. That all life, all existence is subject to changeableness, is changeable. That you're impermanent, the word that's often used. That existence is permeated with suffering. And that there is no reality in the illusion of self. The implications of each of these aspects, there are moral implications for each of these aspects. This is what he's pointing out here. If people are deluded about these things, it means they're looking at the world from the wrong point of view. And if you closely associate yourself with and take refuge in people who are looking at the world from the wrong point of view, then you too will look at the world from the wrong point of view. Avoid the company of those who are deluded and ignorant with regard to good and evil. This should be obvious. But, you know, we actually have to find out from our own experience who the people are who we need to avoid. It isn't so obvious, really. You know, the world puts on a certain face to us, which we have to, both through experience and through instinct, be able to penetrate in order to tell what is good for us to do, what is good for us to be involved with, who it is that is good for us to take refuge in or to be closely associated with. People can be very confused about the nature of good and evil and yet be very nice people. Now, how can that be so? Because people go on a kind of formula of what good and evil is rather than on the gut reactions to, is this actually good to do or is this not good to do? In other words, people trust their head, or their old habits, or other people's opinions, rather than their own spiritual instincts. Listen outwardly and look outwardly, rather than looking within. Remember in a recent talk about good and evil, I read Reverend Master's words about good and evil. Maybe if I can quickly find where that is in the book here, maybe I ought to just read that again, because that really applies here and it's really what you need to know. But I don't know if I can find it real quick. Unless one knows with one's whole being, this is River Master to you, that unless one knows with one's whole being that an act is evil, one does not understand evil. Unless one knows with one's whole being that an act is good, one does not understand good. That's the point. What is it, this whole being thing? Remember I talked about this. It's your basic instinct. It's not talking about necessarily dramatic good and dramatic evil, or big scale good and evil. That's pretty obvious, generally. It's that you're standing at a junction of roads, so to speak. You're looking down, which way am I going to go? And something in you, something deep within you says, don't go that way, go that way. And in my experience, the head cannot be relied on in this regard. It simply cannot be relied on. If you're not trusting your instinct, you're missing it. It's that simple. When things are complex and subtle, it is that simple on this point. If you're not trusting your instinct, you're missing it. Because the head will get it wrong over and over again. Things look the same to the head. The head sees, oh, well, you know, it can give you a list of why things look all right there and all right there and all right there. Then the head tries to make the choice and gets confused. The heart knows what the head does not know, frankly. It's that simple. And that's what Ramesser's talking about. That's what this whole being thing means. And all of us who were around Ramesser at all saw her again and again say things like, well, what she typically say is, everything in me says, you know, and when Ramesser said, everything in me says, you knew it was locked. That's the way she was going to go. And when she said that, you know, I saw her say that again and again, and again, I saw her nail it right between the eyes, and you could tell from the consequences. She did that with me once when I was at a crucial point and I was confused. And, oh, I'm so grateful she did that. This place wouldn't be here and we wouldn't all be sitting here together if she hadn't done that. I came to really trust that in her. And I've come to really trust it in myself and in others. So the people we want to avoid are people who are confused about these key areas, who have a diluted view of life. Now, he doesn't say, I want you to castigate them and throw them out into outer darkness where there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He does not say that. He just says, avoid the company of those who are confused in this way. You know, keep your own company. If everyone you know is confused in this way, keep your own company. And with time, you find those who are not so confused. But when you find someone who is truly not confused in these ways, stick to them like glue, because that is a true spiritual friend. It's easy for the world to see such behavior as some form of pride or snootiness or arrogance or disliking other people. You have to know in your own heart what your intention is. The way I view it is simply just as being kind to oneself. Knowing that if you know yourself, you know something about your own tendencies and what you can get caught in. And you know that you don't want to hang out with people who are really caught in that stuff themselves. And when people are caught in stuff, they don't just keep it to themselves, they propagate it. And I don't want to have other people's delusions propagated on me. That's not pride, and it's not snootiness. It's not disliking people. It's simply having kindness for myself and self-respect. It's that simple. The precepts are incredibly important for having compassion, genuine compassion for oneself. So I want to talk a little bit about the precepts in that regard. The precepts are pointing out the ways, the major ways in which we hurt ourselves spiritually. And I mean really hurt ourselves. And the three pure precepts and the 10 great precepts, they really have it nailed down. The three pure precepts are incredibly important in this regard. And let's just look quickly at them. First, cease from evil, which I always like to put in terms of, you know, you already got a mess on your hands to some extent or other. Don't make it worse. Don't do the things that make it worse. Starting point. Don't make it worse. Okay? And that's obviously just being kind to oneself when you do that. You're doing that which doesn't make your situation worse. You're avoiding doing that which would make your situation worse. Second, do good. Above everything else, that means turn within. Meditate. Get your foundation right for your action. Turn towards the eternal. Ask for help. Stop. Be still. Get your position right from which you can act. I know that doesn't look to the world like, that doesn't look like what the world thinks of as doing good, but this is what it is to do good, truly. So always remember, you will take the consequences of your actions. So it's worth stopping and getting it right. So the first pure precept, cease from evil. Don't keep floundering around getting it wrong. The second one, get in the position from which you get it right. This is so beautiful, the way this is. It's so beautiful. It's so utterly true. The third pure precept, do good for others. Now that is usually viewed as doing that which helps other people. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you do that which is truly good for yourself in those first two pure precepts, in the way I'm talking about it, you will, of necessity, in the next step you take, you'll do that which helps others be a success in their own ways. And will not perpetuate delusion. You will not perpetuate your delusion onto others. And there's another meaning and a deeper meaning to this one. And it is having ceased from doing that which makes the karmic mess and having turned within and got your meditative position from which you can now act in a way that is in accordance or in alignment with your own Buddha nature, then open your heart and your mind to your own Buddha nature and let the eternal get at that, the deep causes of suffering within you. Remember I said at the beginning of this talk I was going to connect up the kindness, being kind to yourself with the kindness or the love of the eternal. And this is where it connects up big time. This is the part that gets left out in normal morality completely. And this is why what we're doing is not normal morality. It is not worldly morality. This is what morality is really supposed to be, what it really is when you are practicing the perfection of Zen. At this level, you can pretty well throw out the other people at this point, because your actions will of necessity do what is good for others, and you just focus on letting the eternal get at your deep need, your deep spiritual need to cut the roots of suffering within yourself. It's not accidental that the original, the ancient, the most ancient form of this precept was purify your own heart. Cease from evil, do that which is good, purify one's own heart. It's not an accident that that was the original form of this precept. But the purification of the heart that it's speaking of cannot be done just through your own will. You can open the door of the heart to allow the eternal, the love of the eternal, to get at that need. But you can't do the fixing of that, the resolving of that need yourself. This is where, you know, really deep contemplative training is needed. Where pure zazen is needed. And where giving the time to the eternal apart from the world is needed. It's extremely difficult to do this at the deep levels out in the world. You have to have a place of retreat from the world. Even if it's just your own private room, whatever it is, to do this. And you have to give it the time there. It's not necessarily a lot of time. It's quality time. That time that you give just to the eternal alone with no ulterior motive. Not because it's required of you in any way, but because this is the whole point of your existence, and you've come to know this. There's a whole world of spirituality that opens up at this level. This is the level of things where the reharmonization with the eternal is able to happen. It's a level of deep spiritual retreat. It's also a level of deeply living in the midst of the world, to live in the world as if in the sky. Just as the lotus is not wetted by the water that surrounds it. The mind and heart are immaculate and beyond all dust. We then live our life bowing to the highest Lord. Don't underestimate what happens when that deepest need is met by the eternal's love. It's utterly transforming. It changes everything in your life. This is not a footnote to an active spiritual life. It is the whole point of life. It's why we were born. The deep roots of suffering are profoundly confused, profoundly grieved, profoundly pained, and they need big time help that no human being can give. They need the direct help of the infinite love of the eternal. And it is at times a frightening path to walk, to make oneself, to open oneself to that help, because it is the great unknown that you open yourself to. You have to believe in the utter goodness of that love that's going to get at your need. You have to trust. Where Master said you have to trust like you've never trusted before. And it's really that simple. You have to trust. She says At the deepest level, you cannot allow even the possibility of the possibility of the possibility of doubt. We've heard her say that, but she's telling the literal truth. So what is it to be truly kind to oneself? To go to that place where self dissolves. To dissolve into the infinite love of the eternal and to allow it to carry you wherever it carries you. Not my will, but thine. And this is the true implication of all the so-called basic teachings of Buddhism. Without this, all of that stuff is just window dressing. There would have been no enlightenment of Shakyamuni Buddha without this process that I'm describing, the deepest level. There would have been no true transmission from Buddha to Buddha, from ancestor to ancestor, without this. Someone had to go through this process in order for us to have the benefits now of studying Buddhism and training Buddhism. If we ourselves, those of us who have given our lives to this, if we do not train at this level ourselves, then we will not have it to pass on to others. Master used to say, I don't write the rules, I just tell you what they are, and that's the way it works. You know, it truly doesn't matter what anyone else does. It truly doesn't matter what's going on in religion at a larger scale, in the world at a larger scale. These things don't matter. What matters for me personally is that I do what I'm talking about here. If that's what matters for you personally, then you can live at peace in the midst of whatever worldly conditions are. And you can die in peace in the midst of them. You take your own treasure house with you, within yourself. It's not outside you.